Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Sharon Shaw Elrod, author of Shar's Story, A Mother-Daughter Reunited. So before we introduce Shar today, I'd like to read a little introduction about this incredible woman and her book. In 1966, Sharon Elrod, at age 22, did basically the worst thing a young woman could do at that time. She got pregnant and she wasn't married. Shar went into hiding, surrendering her baby girl for adoption, and lived a lie for the next 36 years. As a child, Sharon lived with her parents and three best friend sisters in Iowa. She attended several universities and completed several degrees during her academic career. The lie never interfered with her work. She lived a contented life, marrying her best friend, Dr. Jerry Elrod, a United Methodist clergyman, in 1975. They raised his son, Joel, from his first marriage, and she told her husband about her lie, and he loved her anyway. Shar taught at colleges and universities, practiced counseling and psychotherapy, and followed her husband from church to church, finding happiness and professional satisfaction wherever she landed. In spite of the lie, Sharon enjoyed the respect of her colleagues everywhere she lived and received awards of recognition and accomplishment in both Nebraska and Arizona. Upon retirement, the Elrods moved to Jerry's home in the Piney Woods of East Texas, building their retirement home and proceeding to live happily ever after. Then, on a hot summer day in 2002, the telephone rang and the voice said, "Hi, Sharon. This is Tom Lazio from American Home Finding Association in Ottumwa, Iowa. Your daughter just called me, and she wants you to contact her." The 36-year-old lie transformed into love and forgiveness, and Sharon went on to write her fascinating, unbelievable story in her book, Shar's Story, A Mother-Daughter Reunited. So it's just, this is such a great, great pleasure for me to actually have Sharon on the phone today. I had the opportunity to interview her a few months back, and it was an online interview, and I'm just so happy to have her actually in person on the phone today. And I'd like to welcome you, Sharon, to Inside Scoop Live today.
Thanks, Juanita. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Yes, thank you so much. So I did give you a little intro about your story. I'm sure I didn't do it justice whatsoever. So I'd like you to elaborate on the circumstances of your pregnancy and the decision that you made way back when to actually give up your baby for adoption.
That the pregnancy occurred in the summer of 1965, late summer, 65. Mm-hmm. It was a summer romantic fling. Mm-hmm. And when I told my baby's father that I was pregnant, his response to me was fairly typical of the time, I think. He said, "Sharon, there's nothing I can do about that." Mm. And so I was abandoned by him. And also, because the culture of the time was just very unforgiving, my family was programmed to the response that they had, and they abandoned me. Everybody abandoned me, so I was alone. And that's what you did back in the mid-60s with women who did such a stupid thing as I had done. Mm. The priest at my church, the Episcopal Church in Des Moines, said, "Sharon, I've got a place where you can go. You can, nobody will know you're there. Nobody will know who you are, and they'll help you. And then you can, after your baby's born, you can just leave the baby there, and they'll place it for adoption." So, of course, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
There just weren't any other options at that time.
That's incredible. And you know that the 60s, the late 60s, that's not that long ago.
No, it isn't. It's a huge amount of time when you're waiting to hear, as I was waiting all those years.
Yeah.
But it's not a long time. You're right. In terms of a look at history, it's 40 years is just a very short period of time. But,
absolutely.
And the women's movement was really only barely getting started at that time.
Mm.
So women just didn't have the independent voice that we have now. So I did what everybody said I had to do, and I really didn't give it a second thought.
Right, right. I think that's an important thing to know for listeners and readers to know that was just how things were done back then.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Do you feel that writing your book was a part of your healing process?
Oh, absolutely, Juanita. My daughter contacted me and we started developing a relationship, I began to feel absolutely total fury and anger at what I had lost. And in order to not live with that anger on a daily basis, I needed to let it go. I needed to have a way to let it go. And part of that happened in writing the story. You know, I was able to really objectify the experience more than I ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put it out there and look at it and realize that there wasn't anybody to blame. There wasn't any reason to be that angry. And I had all kinds of reasons to be just full of joy now that I had her back in my life.
Mm.
So kind of making that transition and that change occurred as a result of writing the story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So from an outsider's view of your life, you were an extremely accomplished woman with a very, very successful career. Were you aware at all of the amount of pain that you were actually covering up as a result of your past?
No, I wasn't at the time.
Mm.
I had done what I had to do, and living with that kind of pain is just not something I think people can do. Living with it daily is not something people can do and stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I buried it. I only told my husband before we got married.
Mm-hmm.
I told his son, and he immediately wanted us to go get her so his sister could be could live with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a little tyke at the time, and of course didn't understand.
Yeah.
That wasn't possible.
Yeah.
My three sisters knew. My mom and dad knew. A dear friend in Omaha, Nebraska knew, and that's it.
Wow.
And I was considered in communities in which I lived one of the participants and sometimes leader in the women's movement in those communities, and I still didn't deal with all the pain of it until after she contacted me.
That's incredible. Do you think any of the pursuits that you did follow in your adult life were at all influenced or guided by this pain that you had inside, even if it was unconscious?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
I think I went into education and social work because I needed to have, and it was subconscious or unconscious, whatever, I needed to have a way to manage the emotional drama of all of this without it hurting my basic personality. And sometimes I didn't succeed in that. Sometimes I think some of the things that I got angry about socially were influenced by my own personal anger.
Mm.
The way women were treated in the 70s and 80s and the ways in which I got involved in the women's movement was, I think, definitely influenced by that anger and that hurt.
Hmm.
So it is. It's all tied in.
Yes.
And ultimately ending up managing behavioral health and child welfare programs in Arizona, which is where I ended my career and retired from there. Was definitely part of my healing process,
mm-hmm.
Helping other people deal with the kinds of things in a much better way, a much healthier way than I was able to deal with it back in the 60s, was tremendously gratifying.
Oh, I bet. I would imagine. Now, you had mentioned that your husband knew about your secret and said he loved you anyway. Now, did him knowing lessen your pain at all?
No.
No?
No, it didn't. It was just something I knew because I'm a very forthright person. It was just something I knew I had to tell him.
Mm.
I didn't want any secrets in our relationship. And I told him, and his response was interesting, Juanita. Every year when her birthday would come around, I would say, "It's Rachel Land's birthday." And he said, "Yes, I know." And he would always say that, and he would say, "You know, someday she will call you. Someday you will hear from her."
Wow.
I couldn't live with that on a daily basis. I couldn't live with, will it be today? Will it be today? I mean, you just can't do that for 40 years.
Of course not.
So, but he never, ever gave up the expectation, the hope that we would hear from her.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it is. He just knew it would happen.
Oh.
And later on, after she did contact me, I asked him, "How did you know?" And he said, "You know, she has your genes and chromosomes, Sharon. She has to be bright. She has to be curious.
Mm.
She has to, you know, want to know who you are. She just, you know, you would want to know. You want her back in your life, and she just has to do that."
That's an incredible support. Even if the two of you didn't talk about it on a daily basis, I would imagine just knowing that that support was there and that type of faith was very powerful for you.
Yes, yeah, mm-hmm. It was. It was, and powerful is the word. It was just, it's indicative of the kind of relationship my husband and I have. But it also was like, you know, if he's gonna hope and expect for me, then I don't have to do it.
Oh.
You know, I don't have to think about it. He'll do it for me, and he did.
Mm, incredible. And it was actually your daughter that sought you out. Would you just talk a little to how and why she decided to find you?
Well, she had a friend at the time who had had a very, very, very serious, very serious automobile accident.
Uh-huh.
And almost didn't survive it. And as a result, she my daughter got to thinking, you know, it is possible that the problem of the automobile accident and knowing that she might not survive could happen to her. And she didn't want to miss any chance of knowing me if she were, you know, could end up in a bad accident or could be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the catalyst. That was the experience that prompted it. But I had called. I had always left word with the adoption agency in Iowa, and told them that where I lived, what my phone number was, in the event that she might contact them to get in touch with me. So she went through that experience with her friend and was on her way shopping one day and just pulled off the side of the road and called the adoption agency. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing. It was the right time to do it, and she contacted them. And, of course, I had hounded them for years.
Oh yeah, sure.
wanting to be sure that they would get a hold of me,
mm-hmm.
If they heard from her, and they immediately knew who she was, and they knew who I was, and so it only took just a few hours to get in touch with me.
So they're that quick.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is incredible. So when did you finally meet in person? What year was that?
Well, it was several months after we started communicating. Thank goodness for the internet email.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to get through the first stages of our reunion without having to talk on the phone with each other, and without having to sit down and write a letter that you know, maybe we'd want to retract. I remember the first email I sent her through the agency, but the first email I wrote and rewrote and rewrote,
and it
took forever for me to feel like I had said what I wanted to say and had said it appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
So we emailed back and forth. Well, we emailed first of all in July of 2002, And then I didn't hear from her until December. And I didn't know it until later, but she'd gone on a water skiing adventure one day with some friends and fell and broke ribs front and back and literally couldn't move.
Mm.
So I didn't hear from her for several months. And I thought, well, I had just heard the one thing that I was going to hear, and that was, you know, she'd emailed me, this is my life, I've got children, this is my husband, and you know, just gave me a lot of information,
right.
But she didn't tell me her name, and she didn't tell me where she lived.
Oh.
You know, the anonymity was there initially, and it really needs to be that way.
I'm sure that's common to the whole process.
Very,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So we didn't communicate then, and by October, 4 months later, I thought, I'm never going to hear from her again. She communicated all she needed to, and that's it, and I've got to figure out how to live with this.
Mm.
And again, my husband said, oh, no, I don't know what's going on, but you're going to hear from her again. And then a week before Christmas, Tom called again from the adoption agency and said, Sharon, I have a Christmas present for you. She's called again, and she's sending you an email directly this time to you. It's not coming through me. I just want you to be on the alert for it so you don't delete it.
Mm.
And so I had a wonderful Christmas present that year.
Oh.
We started communicating very frequently. I shared some pictures, and by the end of January, my husband and I, we discovered that she lived within 5 miles of where my father lived. My father and my sister and my niece all lived within about 5 miles of where she lived.
Oh,
so.
Is that something?
So we got on a plane and came out, and we finally met in late January of 2003.
Oh, that's just wonderful. So after carrying the shame and the grief for so, so long, what was it like for you to find acceptance from your daughter?
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Mm.
Because I worked in the field for over 30 years, I know not all reunions are happy ones.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pain and sometimes a lot of rejection and a lot of anger that people just can't get through. Even after a reunion. So I know that, I knew that was possible. And that did not happen with us. We have had, on a scale of 1 to 10, our reunion probably goes over the top. It is just so incredibly happy for
yes.
both of us.
Yes, it is.
And what I discovered was once we were back in each other's lives, the pain of what I lost for 36 years won't ever go away, but the anger is gone.
Mm.
It has been replaced by this incredible happiness and joy and being part of her life on a daily basis and having grandchildren who decided they wanted to call me Grandma.
Mm.
And just getting life back to normal. For example, I'm working for my daughter and her husband in their business.
Yes, I was actually going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
How is that going?
Very well. I have some experience and skill that they decided they wanted to take advantage of,
mm-hmm.
and I'm involved now in doing some writing for them.
Well, this is a media business, right?
It's a media business. Uh-huh.
Okay.
It is. And so I'm writing for them. And when we finish this interview, I'll hop in my car and drive to the office and spend the day with them in the office.
Oh,
so,
isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it is. Mm. It is just an incredible experience. I go to bed every night thinking life just doesn't get any better than this.
That's the way to live. How has it been getting to know your daughter over the past few years and integrating your two families?
It's been absolutely marvelous.
It has.
My sisters and their children and grandchildren just consider her a part of our family.
Mm.
They wouldn't think of having a family event without all of them present, all of them together. She's been delighted to meet her biological cousins. Her biological family has not replaced the family she grew up in,
mm-hmm.
and we don't want that ever to happen. But as she herself says, she calls me her bonus,
aww.
And I assure her that I love being a bonus. the families we've gotten acquainted, and we've spent several holidays together and have an absolutely wonderful time when we're together.
Mm.
One of my nieces, my oldest sister's daughter, was actually born on the same day my daughter was born. Same day, same year, 2 hours apart.
Oh, wow.
And she's the one, she's an attorney, and she's the one who lives only less than 5 miles away from my daughter. So it was quite a surreal experience for the two of them when they finally got together and got acquainted.
Mm, I bet it was, you know, this whole story is somewhat surreal. You know, it's the incredible positive outcome of it. It really is, as you say, over the top. And, you know, you had mentioned that not all reunion stories have this kind of an ending. And what are your thoughts towards reunions that don't have happy endings and how there can still be, you know, a certain level of healing for the people involved?
My thought about that, Juanita, is that when reunions occur and they're not happy experiences and people don't have the opportunity to develop a good relationship, my thought about that is I would hope that they don't give up.
Mm.
I would hope they would come back and try again. Perhaps at a later time, perhaps the timing wasn't just right,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there may have been other stressors in the lives of either the biological mother or the child who was surrendered that created problems. I would encourage them not to give up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is such a bond that gets created between a mother and a child that she carries for 9 months that it just can't be broken.
Yeah.
And so my thought is, boy, I hope people don't give up just because maybe the first few attempts don't turn out the way they think they should.
Or difficult. There has to be so many underlying emotions and feelings and just all of that that's repressed, that sometimes it needs to come out, and it does come out in ways that are difficult. So I think that those are really powerful words that you're saying, not to give up.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean them very sincerely.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the amount of anger that you were carrying with you over the years. How do you think that anger manifested in your life?
Well, I think that it created some health issues for me that, interestingly, in the last 5 years, have disappeared.
Oh, wow.
Um,
well, they say, you know, the whole body-mind idea where our emotions affect our bodies, so that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's one of the things that happened. And I think the other thing is that there were times when I was involved in a cause or a social issue that a lot of people were upset and angry about. And I think my anger was deepened, heightened because of the personal anger that I carried with me.
Mm.
So I think that's probably another way that it was manifest over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel that anger anymore. I am aware of this incredible joy-filled life that I live absolutely every day.
I was going to ask you, what happens when you take away that anger?
It's replaced by this just absolutely incredible joy.
Mm.
I get up in the morning and think about all of the things that I have to be grateful for. Mm. And I think about that absolutely every day. This is an experience that does not allow me to take anything for granted anymore.
Wow. So how has this journey changed your self-image as a woman, as a wife, and as a mother?
I've always been a fairly self-confident person, but now I know that having gone through reunion and having created a life with my baby, who is now an absolutely spectacularly gorgeous 41-year-old woman,
mm.
I do not believe there is anything in that I could confront that I couldn't handle with confidence, with the sureness that no matter how it turns out, it's going to be good.
Mm.
I will make it good, and what somebody else may think is just ho-hum and regular, I will find something unusual and maybe even spectacular.
Mm.
Some people think that that's phony. It isn't for me. It's very, very real. So I guess heightened self-confidence, knowing that I can handle whatever happens in life is probably the greatest gift this experience has given me personally.
Mm, that's amazing. You know, I would almost wonder if there was a feeling of fragmentation possibly because of this part of your life, this such a strong part of your life was not really a part of your life, and if you feel more of a whole person now.
Absolutely, and those are good words to describe it, Juanita. Life has just come full circle and has come together for me now.
Mm.
And interestingly, it has for my husband. Because I'm working for the kids, he and I are maintaining two homes. We're maintaining a relationship that sometimes is more long distance and on the phone than it is together.
Okay.
And what Jerry says to me is he wouldn't dream of interfering with my spending time with my daughter and her husband and grandchildren after having been estranged from her and them, from her for 36 years and them for, you know, since the time she was married and had children.
Mm.
And Jerry's position about that is, I'm just not going to interfere with that.
Isn't that something, you know, so not only is this an incredible adoption reunion story, but there is an underlying story here between you and your husband of a great love.
Yes.
For one another. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love and respect, and he has as much confidence as I do that this is an absolutely marvelous experience that we're both enjoying in slightly different ways, but he knows how important it is to me to have as much time as I can possibly have with her.
That's great.
And he's very supportive of that. So, you know, what was fragmented and not together at all has come together, and the transformation, as I say in the book, is, you know, from guilt and shame to forgiveness and love and joy. It's an absolutely incredible experience.
That is amazing. Now, I know that part of the message that you want to convey to readers is the spiritual aspect of this story. And would you just talk a little bit towards this powerful message that you do incorporate in your book?
Yes. What I became aware of, as did my daughter, when we started developing, figuring out how we wanted to define our relationship, we kept encountering all of these coincidences. Mm. The coincidence that she lives within just a few miles of three members of my immediate family. You know, there are some biologic and genetic coincidences that you have to lay, you know, at the foot of biology and chemistry.
Sure.
You know, yes, she looks like me. She's got blue eyes. I've got blue eyes. She's got dark hair. I've got dark hair. She's a few inches taller than I am, but, you know, our bodies look very much alike, and certainly our facial features are. But she graduated valedictorian of her class. I graduated valedictorian of my class, high school.
Oh.
She graduated college with honors. I graduated college with honors. You know, there are just some things that, you know, may be influenced by biology and maybe genetic, but not all, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
One day last week, she poked her head in my office and said, you know, Sharon, I need to, I think we need to do, make this phone call and do this, a task that she just thought about. And I had just completed it. I had just done it. And I told her that. And, you know, we, those kinds of things happen so much, we just look at each other and roll our eyes anymore.
Yeah.
It's as if somehow we're just most of the time on the same page.
Yeah.
And it's a very fulfilling experience, but it's one of those really unusual things. She believes, and I do too, that what I said to her when she was right after she was born, I whispered in her little tiny little ear, "Come back and find me someday."
Mm.
It took her 36 hours to decide to be born.
Wow.
She didn't want to be born. And when that happened, I believe that that message somehow got through to her. I think that's spiritual. The only way I can define that is spiritual.
Yeah.
And she just felt like she wanted to know who I was, and I think that's, you know, part of that is spiritual.
Yeah, there is definitely a deep, deep connection between the two of you, and if, you know, people read your book, they will definitely see how those coincidences line up and the similarities that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It really is powerful. So I understand that you're actually in the process of writing a full-length memoir of this journey, because Char's story, this book, is kind of a one-night read. It's a shorter version of what you will be coming out with. Would you tell us more about why you decided to rewrite it?
Well, what I decided to do was to really write a memoir that reflects my life, not just this experience.
Okay.
The book really focuses on this one part of my life, which certainly is a huge part of my life. There's no question about that.
Sure.
But there really are other cultural and familial influences that are related to this experience that I did not write about. A couple of people have said to me after they read my book, boy, that story was just screaming to be written.
Mm.
And it was. And I hurried up and I wrote it, and you're right, it's a one-night read, and it was intended to be. I did not intend to write a full-length memoir. However, now that it's done and published, and I've had such a marvelous response to it, I decided I'm going to go back and write the whole story now.
That's great.
Because it's obvious that the whole story is not there.
Right, Right. And I'm sure over the years you've had more insights about your life, about things that have happened in your life, and the different emotions as the layers come, you know, unpeel like the onion, you know, as they say. I'm sure that there's just so much more that has come to light for you in the past few years.
Absolutely, there is. Mm-hmm. And that's why I am going to do a rewrite, and not a rewrite. I'm going to do another book, and
yes,
it's going to be a full-length memoir.
That's great. So for Char's story, for this, the reunion story, this book, you know, aside from being an adoption story, it really is a powerful testament to the healing power of, you know, healing grief, to what can actually happen when you, like I say, peel those layers off and expose a secret. You know, so what are your thoughts on the wider scope of this story applying to other secrets and how they can affect a person's life?
And that's probably the third thread in the whole story, Juanita. Thank you for bringing that up.
Sure.
I think what my thoughts about that are that most of us have secrets. Most of us live with some guilt. Most of us live with a sense of not being proud of something we've done. Most of us have those little secrets tucked away somewhere. My thought about that is I would hope people would read this book and say, you know what, I'm going to let that secret go. I'm going to expose it to the light of day. And then when that happens, typically people discover, boy, it's not as bad as I thought it was. It's a whole lot easier to deal with than I thought it would be. I shouldn't have had to have kept this secret all of these years. It feels better. It feels life is fuller. Life is, once secrets are revealed, there's a burden that's lifted. And it's an amazing emotional experience. And I would hope that my book would help people learn to do that, would give them permission to do that.
So the truth will set you free.
Yep, exactly.
That's incredible, Sharon. So what is your website?
It's the book without any punctuation, www.sharsstory.com.
Okay.
And there's just remember two S's in the middle of that, Char's Story.
Okay.
No punctuation.
Okay, and I know that readers can purchase your book through your website, and you've got some wonderful pictures up there too, so I really encourage listeners to go to your website and have a look at all the wonderful family pictures and the joy that is just expressed in the faces of all of your family, and each one of them really is fun.
Thank you, Juanita. I love those pictures, and I'm delighted to share them with the world.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I know that your book was a finalist in the 2007 North Texas Book Festival.
Yes, it was. That was also a nice honor.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's very, very exciting. So our time is kind of coming to an end here, Sharon, and I just wanted to let you share any final thoughts that you have towards your book or anything you would like. You know, I'm sure that there are people out there listening that may have gone through or are in the process of going through similar experiences. So if you wanted to share anything to them.
I think I would hope that people, especially women, would read my book and be encouraged to deal with issues in their lives that are creating problems for them. My email address is on my website, and I enjoy hearing from people who have read my book or who've listened to me on this interview. I love responding. I respond to every piece of information, every piece of mail I get.
Great.
So delighted for people to contact me.
That's great. I'm sure that over this process of your reunion, you have amassed a wide variety of information on how to get in contact with, you know, children or, you know, any all of that kind of information. Do you include that on your website, or should people contact you directly?
They need to contact me directly, because what I've discovered is there are nuances in every situation that make every single reunion possibility different.
Okay.
Because I worked in the field, I've facilitated a number of reunions and would be glad to help people do that.
That's great. And with your background in the psychology and all of that, I'm sure that you are just the perfect person for people to talk to. So we certainly encourage them to email you with any questions.
Thanks so much, Juanita. It's a delight to talk with you.
This has just been fantastic, Sharon. Much success to you. I can't wait for your full-length memoir to come out so we can even find out more about your incredible life.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right, listeners, as mentioned, you can purchase Char's story, A Mother-Daughter Reunited, through Sharon's website at www.charsstory.com. There's two S's in the middle there, as well through local and online bookstores. You can read a recent book review and online interview, as well as a book preview, which is like a little movie trailer for Char's story, at readerviews.com. Thanks so much for listening. I know you will have enjoyed this interview as much as I have. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.